Greetings. Thanks for listening to Bear Soup. Bubbling up in the Bear Soup hot tub for this program, a Jeff Mann poem printed recently in the Gay and Lesbian Review. The first part of Weight and Fat as Masculine Drag, my interview with Dr. Larry Mass from Bears on Bears. Then the usual audio furbulosity. Come on in, the water's fine. You're just in time for Bear Soup. Welcome to Bear Soup, news, views, skews, and schmooze for the online Ursine community. This is your host, Ron Serratia, casting my pod to you through the mysterious tubes of the interwebs from southeastern coastal Connecticut, wishing you a very happy, fun, and safe Martin Luther King Jr. Day. You're listening to episode number 64 of the Bear Soup podcast. Streaming online at bearradio.net, Mondays and Wednesdays, 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Times. Bear Soup is also available through our free iTunes subscription and download service. Access the Bear Soup archives through the Bear Soup tab on ronserratia.com. That's spelled R-O-N-S-U-R-E-S-H-A. Presumably you can tell without seeing me that I am recording this stark naked in a steamy outdoor hot tub, because that's what the rubber duckies are for. Clothing optional program. Bear Soup is sponsored by the Bookish Bears at Bare Bones Books. Check out their fine titles by bear authors at barebonesbooks.com, spelled B-E-A-R-B-O-N-E-S-B-O-O-K-S. The following is a poem printed in the Gay and Lesbian Review Worldwide in the January 2010 issue. The poem is called For a Seductive Student and is written by author Jeff Mann. The poem form, by the way, is a villanelle. You're a threat, yes. You're dying to know, I know. Don't think I haven't caught your grin. Your biceps, tattoos, chest hair like dark snow. Aren't ethics always inconvenient? Saying no to student-teacher fucking, unprofessional sin. You're a threat. I know you'd love to know this ache to tie you down. Take your ass slow. I'd work your nipples hard, gag your bearded grin, lap your tattoos. Your chest curls soft snow. I'd belt your furry ass into a grunting glow. You're half my age, so how can we begin? You're a threat, certainly. A boy dying to know how daddy would love him long, use him slow. In class, you stretch and flex, show off young skin, your biceps, tattoos, chest hairs dark snow. Sweet delays are how dark passions grow. When you graduate, bear kin, maybe then. You're a threat, yes. A boy dying to know how we'd mix tattoos, dark fur, semen, snow. And that was a poem written by Jeff Mann, entitled For a Seductive Student. And now we have another reading from the chapter entitled Weight and Fat as Masculine Drag, a discussion with Dr. Lawrence Mass from Bears on Bears Interviews and Discussions. Lawrence Mass, MD, or Larry, is a co-founder of Gay Men's Health Crisis and the first journalist to write about AIDS in any press. He's the author of a memoir, Confessions of a Jewish Wagnerite, Being Gay and Jewish in America, and is author or editor of three collections, Homosexuality and Sexuality, Volumes 1 and 2, and We Must Love One Another or Die, The Life and Legacies of Larry Kramer. Dr. Mass is a unit director of addiction treatment programs at Buffalo Medical Center and Greenwich House, Inc. in New York City, where he lives with his life partner, Arnie Kantorowicz, who is an interviewee in the same book. Larry continues to use his Bears in Health column, running in American Bear and A Bear's Life magazines, as a forum on bear health issues. The dialogue begins with me speaking. Larry, is there a medical definition of being overweight for men? Larry, there's no absolute definition, although there are tables and suggested ideal weights, and there's a figure called body mass index, BMI, that requires some mathematics to determine. There are many different charts with normal ranges for body weight based on height, which you see at the gym and medical offices at clinics. They come from various medical and public health institutions and studies and are all within a few pounds of each other in recommending ideal weights. Run. 1998, National Institute of Diabetes and Digestive and Kidney Diseases statistics indicate that more than half of American adult males are overweight. Less than 20% of American adult males are obese. How serious is being overweight compared to smoking or drinking? Larry, as for the seriousness of being overweight in terms of health consequences, the best analogy is to cigarettes and alcohol. In fact, being overweight can have some of the same health consequences that smoking and drinking have, such as high blood pressure and hardening of the arteries. And the analogies don't stop there. Indeed, eating disorders are widely regarded as the phenomenon of compulsivity and addiction, just like drugs and cigarettes and alcohol and gambling. Ron, I was surprised to discover recently that men don't store fat in the same way as women. Whereas women store their fat around their hips, men store their fat around the abdomen, which, because it surrounds the vital organs, is potentially dangerous to health. Larry, of course, there are people who are large yet look healthy and happy and wonderful, and those of us who are turned on to big men certainly think that they are just that. In reality, though, many or even most of these folks have health problems. Happens to me all the time. I meet some big bear who I think is just the hottest, only to then discover all these health problems he has, including some of the same ones I have. Ron, is that a turnoff? Larry, no. So powerful is the attraction to bigness in men for me and many other bears that we don't care, or act as if we don't. As a physician and writer whose highest value is truth, however, I can't pretend the truth is something it isn't. In other words, just because I'm turned on to big men doesn't mean bigness is healthy. Another example of this truth problem is the dichotomy we see between our affirmation of sex and questions of sexual compulsivity. Just because many of us are still acting out sexually and are sexually compulsive doesn't mean that author and AIDS activist Larry Kramer's critique of us doesn't have to be taken seriously. Ron, what do you mean by Larry Kramer's critique of us? Larry, well, Larry Kramer believes that as a community, gay men have always been and remain sex-obsessed or besotted. He's generalizing, of course, and it can seem easy to dismiss Larry as older and embittered and erotophobic. Actually, Larry never used the paradigm of sexual compulsivity or addiction. He's much too straight-talking for that. But that, I believe, is the phenomenon he saw and has tried to critique. Ron, can you be more specific about how compulsive eating and or being overweight contribute to physical health problems for gay men? Larry, As you know, some of these topics I've covered in my health column for American Bear and my chapter for Les Wright's Bear Book 2. There's a slew of specific health consequences to being overweight. The biggest are diabetes, hypertension, ASCVD, arteriosclerotic cardiovascular disease, ASPVD, arteriosclerotic peripheral cardiovascular disease, heart attack, stroke, sleep apnea, arthritis, as well as various gastrointestinal disturbances. Not everyone who's overweight gets these, of course, just as not everyone who smokes gets lung cancer or COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. Run. That's a good thing, considering that so many North Americans are considered clinically overweight. Leary. Yes, it's true of the whole country, but it's a problem of the whole country, as a recent entire issue of the Journal of the American Medical Association was devoted to pointing out. Ron. What are the implications, then, for big men? Leary. At the obvious level, the JAMA issue is saying that many of us are too overweight, that in the best interests of preventive medicine, we need to be more conscientious about diet and exercise. Ron, what's the best way to do that? Larry, while there is no surefire regimen for weight reduction, the recommendations are crucial to all programs. Greatly reduce the intake of fat and sugar and exercise regularly. Another common suggestion is to avoid being famished and to reduce the bulk volume of food intake by eating smaller meals at shorter intervals, say 6 small meals instead of 3 big ones. Finally, issues of self-esteem may play critical roles in compulsivity and are often best addressed in group therapeutic programs such as Weight Watchers and Overeaters Anonymous. Ron. Aside from the standard listen to your hunger pangs adage, that sounds like solid prevention advice. Let's get onto the idea of the changing standard of obesity in men. Larry. Between the lines, I think what the JAMA issue is saying is that the notion that fat is good is causing trouble. That's one thing for us to learn to be more inclusive and not express overt prejudice toward the overweight and fat. But it's another to say that all of that is now normal and healthy. Ron. True. In the bear world, there is a whole different level of acceptance of size. I think bears are probably guilty of participating in that blind acceptance, but not, perhaps, more than other Americans. Larry. Precisely. I wonder to what extent the sanctioning of being overweight is a result of images of celebrities such as John Goodman, images which have been positive because they've broken a lot of stereotypes. I've had fantasies about Tom Arnold, especially in uniform. And what about the hottest of them all, Chris Penn? Ron, John is one of the sexiest big men I've ever seen. Certainly the popularity of men like him, Tom Arnold, Drew Carey, and other bigger guys have influenced American culture. Nevertheless, bigness carries an overweening stigma throughout our culture, which is odd considering how commonplace it is. In any case, let's look at the masculine appeal of fatness. Larry. For many gay men, bigness has always been a feature of masculinity. Why and where that comes from, I'm not sure, but women view bigness similarly. One archetype of masculinity is bigness. For example, football players, construction workers, weightlifters. On the other hand, plenty of gay men are most attracted to pretty boys, mainly because they see them as masculine. And what about Asian countries where bigness is rare? Ron, I guess that's true, but even there are exceptions, such as sumo wrestlers. Larry, all of which goes to show how socially constructed so much of this is. How arbitrary. By bear standards, many Asian and Native peoples would be considered effeminate. It's ridiculous. Ron, Western culture has largely, it seems, associated fat with women and femininity, and muscle with men and masculinity. An ironic feature of hypermasculinity is that it seems to compel men to want to emasculate others. Larry, I believe that the fetishization, as we might call it, of masculinity is a reality in the bear world. Where it really comes out is in the use of epithets like Twinkie or Pretty Boy or Chelsea Boy. Run. As they say, you can understand much about a society or a culture by looking at the people it excludes and shuns, but that works both for and against bears. Larry. Yes, it's interesting to see how the massively obese are accepted in the bear world that is centered more around being big than being seriously obese. Run. Would you characterize bear culture as being primarily about overindulgence? Larry. I don't want to say that the subculture can't have positive spiritual energies and values. I feel that in its current state, however, ultimately the bear world is overwhelmingly about sex. When all is said and done, it's another circuit party subculture like the gay leather or gym body world, and like the proliferation of Plato's retreat-type places for swingers that were a hallmark of what we used to call the sexual revolution. In that sense, it's more like than unlike the world of the big white and black and blue and morning parties in Palm Springs, Montreal, Miami, Fire Island, and elsewhere. Ron, can you say more about this equation? Bear culture equals sex culture with a view toward bear health risks? Larry, bear culture is organized around big social events, wherein the main thing going on is sexual connecting. Bear busts, the beer or soda fundraising socials, and bear organizations are primarily social and sexual, although they, like the big party dance events, also raise money for charities. Take away the sex from bear culture and what do you have? Some very scattered and disparate notions of masculinity and preference for body types, tribal bonding based on similar or complementary sexual preferences. Now let me say this about bear sensibility. The same criticism I'm leveling has been leveled against gay sensibility, that there is no such thing. Well, there is and there isn't. The bear subculture is this real thing we're all involved in, and yet it's constructed of nothing real, enduring, nothing absolute. It's made up of bits and pieces of things that are part of bigger trends. Ultimately, there is no singular, circumscribable entity. The bears, any more than anything you can define as gay sensibility, the gay community, leather folk, or the sexual revolution. Ron, forming community through sexual preference similarities may not be the most enduring of values, but it is not nothing. Larry, right. No matter how mutable it is, it's what's happening to us, and we're not discounting its power or importance, whatever it is or isn't. Personally, it's had a huge presence in my life. Once, Arnie asked me, "Why are you so involved with bears? What's that really all about?" My answer was clear and immediate. "Because I love them," I said. I should have said, "us." We are my people. How? Why? I don't know. Ron, perhaps that's part of the attraction, that those intense feelings are both familiar and unknown. Larry, at the most primitive level, it's because I just feel instinctively that these are my people. Ron, perhaps exactly because bears are so indefinable, they are so easy to love, as a sort of archetypal man-loving man. Larry, yes. I went on to say to Arnie that my love of bears is like his, and my love of gay people. Ultimately, how rational is it? I'd like to examine now bears' mental health and behavior problems further, and in particular, self-esteem issues. How does being big affect gay men's early sense of self? Is it possible to say how being big and gay might relate? Larry, Well, I'm not a psychologist or psychiatrist, but being big and having issues around that are by no means limited to being gay. As far as being gay and big is concerned, it's just a double load of social nonconformity to deal with. In some ways, they come together. In others, they are separate issues. That is, some people have eating disorders, which is a problem of addiction and compulsivity, not necessarily related to being gay, but it helps to deal with the two together. Ron. So it's not uncommon that self-esteem issues of big men are compounded by coming out or just being gay, or vice versa. Larry. In many instances, sure. A lot of gay men and lesbians have to deal with secondary, minority, and other identity issues and concerns. Being Jewish, being overweight, being black, being an alcoholic, being big, and the like. The varieties and permutations of how all that can come out are infinite. Ron. That perhaps can be seen as a body-based mechanism developed to shield the self from insult or injury instead of mental or psychic armor. When groups like Bear Clubs or Girth and Mirth celebrate the essential fatness of big gay men, does it help to diffuse the stigma that fat people usually experience? Larry. Oh yes, and that aspect of it is wonderful. But as I've stated, it's troubled at the level of saying that fat is good, normal, or healthy. I agree with my fellow bears that big and even fat are beautiful, but as a physician, I can't say it's healthy. Ron. Getting back to the topic of compulsive overeating, I understand you're not a shrink, but I want to ask your take on the psychological dynamic of encouragers and gainers, which to me seems a very codependent type of relationship. What does it mean when someone who's overweight wants to gain even more weight and is encouraged to do so in a sexual partnership? Larry. This is a frontier of gay subcultural behavior and of psychology, something very much of our time and culture. Encouragers and gainers publish a newsletter, and I have some issues, but there are no formal studies on this, at least as far as I know. Nor has there been any public discussion, though there has been some art, such as Nalen Blake's video of an encourager-gainer encounter between himself and former Metro Bears president John Okult. So anything I have to say is shooting from the hip. Ron. As you say, forewarned is forearmed. Larry. Okay, here goes. I'm attracted to big and even fat men myself, so I know what it is to fetishize weight and body parts like bellies. For me, big butts have the most power. I think the phenomenon of encouragers and gainers is mostly about eroticization and fetishization of eating, weight gaining, and sometimes of body functions. For example, for some folks, observing, rubbing, and listening to the gurgles of a big belly as they watch their partner eat is highly erotic. Run. There's a great word for those digestive sounds. Borborygmi. Larry. Anyways, these actions have erotic appeal to the extent of fetishization, just as certain other people are into feet, shoes, lingerie, other cross-dressing during sex, S&M, and toilet activities. Now, when the activity becomes more important than the individual, it's called paraphilia, the newer psychiatric term for perversion. But that doesn't mean that people can't spice up their erotic lives with this stuff. Many of us get into this and that to some degree. It's when an activity becomes exclusive and takes over your sexuality to the extent of determining your erotic life entirely, at the expense of other considerations, that there may be something to look at critically. On the other hand, encouragers and gainers are people who have felt very isolated and abnormal with their preferences, like leather folk, bears, girth and mirth, and others. They now have a subculture they can connect with that makes them feel less alone, less abnormal, and wherein they can find like-minded partners. Ron, when someone encourages another person to gain weight, isn't one partner actually causing harm to the other? Doesn't that add to the other person's likelihood of unhealth and disease? Larry, yes, but so does licking dirty ass, getting whipped to the point of bleeding, getting fucked bareback, or getting fist fucked. All stuff
people make legitimate choices to do. I left out drinking piss because there's really no health risk there.
Ron, is it just that one method is overt and the other subtle?
Larry, no, I see no difference between encouragers and gainers and shit-eaters and shit-feeders or tit-torturers and tit-torturees, as long as it's consensual and both are doing what they want.
Ron, perhaps then there's not a difference.
Larry, I have no more interest than you or even Patrick Califia in telling people what they should or shouldn't do, what's right or wrong. But when it comes to what's healthy or what are the health risks of certain behaviors, that's another matter. If you want to fistfuck, fine, but you should know that there are some health hazards. As you put it earlier, and as I tried to put it once in an article on fistfucking, from which this final concluding remark got censored, if you're going to be forearmed, be forewarned.
Ron.
So encouragers and gainers consciously and mutually consent to the situation?
Larry.
Of course. Do you think encouragers and gainers aren't consensual?
Ron.
I suppose they are. I'm sure this reflects my own bias, but I couldn't imagine agreeing to do that in a relationship.
Larry.
Well, that's because you're not an encourager or gainer. On the other hand, it is underhanded in the same way that S&M is. The top seduces the bottom into doing something self-punishing or destructive. But the reality is that it takes two to tango. That's not sexual sadism, as opposed to sadomasochism or Strasbourg geese, the ones that are force-fed in order to make foie gras, where stuff is being rammed down throats non-consensually.
Ron, an apt metaphor.
And that was the first part of Weight and Fat as Masculine Drag, my interview with Dr. Larry Mass from Bears on Bears.
You've been listening to Bear Soup with Ron Serratia, episode number 64. Check out the Bear Soup tab on my homely little home blog, www.ronserratia.com. Bear Soup is news, schmooze, stews, skews, and interviews for the bear community with your author and editor host, Ron Serratia. Bubbles for the Bear Soup Hot Tub are powered by our sponsor, Bare Bones Books. Check out their fine titles by bear authors at barebonesbooks.com, spelled BEARBONESBOOKS. Look for Bear Soup, also on Facebook, and please feel free to growl at me at bearsoup@gmail.com. On the next show, Bear Soup looks at Chi-Chi LaRue's Bear Vids. Thanks once again for listening to Bear Soup.